This is Jim Inkster coming today on Talk Louisiana. We'll talk with Louisiana Education Superintendent John White on his evaluation by the Board of Elementary and Secondary Education and the state of education in our state. It's been 7 years of some controversy and much success for John White, and we'll talk about both. He has both critics and, of course, stalwarts in his corner, but he has tangled with two different governors. Mark Ballard, Capitol Bureau Chief for The Advocate, will comment on the GOP search for a challenger next year to Governor John Bel Edwards. The primary is October 12th, so we are inside 14 months before the next governor's election. And Dr. Karen Danton of Baton Rouge will discuss the keys to managing stress. All this today on the 60th birthday of Madonna here on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. If you're dialing in Baton Rouge, 297-5633, you can always send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. We're about to be joined by State Superintendent of Education, John White, and we have much to catch up with him about. It's been about a year since he has been with us, and he's always a compelling guest. We do want to note that the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, has died in Detroit, 76 years old, and what an amazing voice and spectacular career that spanned about half a century for Aretha Franklin, and she is gone at 76, dying on the same day, August 16th, that Elvis Aaron Presley died on this date in 1977, 41 years ago. And Babe Ruth, the Sultan of SWAT, the greatest slugger of them all, some say, he died on this date in 1948, 70 years ago. So the King of Swing, Babe Ruth, the King of Rock and Roll, and the Queen of Soul all died on 16 August. 877-217-5757 is again your number. And good morning to you, Superintendent John White.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Nice to talk with you as always. Let's start. I understand you got a positive job review yesterday from the Board of Elementary and Secondary Education. Your thoughts about getting the seal of approval from BESSE?
Well, the BESSE board has done a good job. I've been in this job nearly 7 years. They've done a good job over that time of outlining both student achievement goals and my own professional competencies. They conduct that evaluation every year, and I've tended to score at a range that is effective, and we're moving things in the right direction, which I think is representative of the school system. But they've also pointed out and the data show where there are still some real struggles in the school system. So my evaluation has never been a 4 out of 4, and this year I was at a 3 out of 4.
3 even.
3.1, that is as it is with teachers, as they could tell you. That means that I've been rated effective, proficient, but I've not been rated highly effective, and I think that's not a bad place to be, because it always indicates that there are places to grow. If you look at our mm-hmm. schools last year, our graduation rate is up, our advanced placement scores are way up, our reading and social studies scores were up, but we have persistent challenges in mathematics, and as one example of something that needs to be addressed. And just with the school system, there's a lot of room for me to grow as well.
Well, there are about 700,000 public school students in the state, and John White, our guest, is in charge of carrying out those policies. And in his nearly 7 years on the job, he now ranks as one of the longest-serving superintendents of education in the country. And Louisiana is often measured against other states in this region, and other states that require the ACT for entrance to public colleges and universities. How are we faring in that regard?
We do actually reasonably well in that regard. But most important, we've made gains. We do outperform Mississippi and North Carolina and South Carolina, Alabama in the ACT. We trail Kentucky and Tennessee in our southern region. But more important than that is just progress. And I'm very proud that since I started in this role, our schools have ensured that 8,000 more kids per year get an ACT score that qualifies them for TOPS. And as a result, literally thousands of kids every year now are qualifying for TOPS who wouldn't have years ago. We think of the TOPS problem as the budget problem as a negative thing, and every year over the last 5 or 6 years now, this has been a kind of running debate. We don't have enough money to pay for TOPS. What's not talked about is that one of the drivers behind that is that we've got more kids who are eligible for TOPS than ever before. And, so in some ways, it's a good problem to have, that you have more kids who are prepared to go on to post-secondary education, and you have more kids who are ready to do it. So I'm happy with where we're moving in terms of the right direction. Again, we've got a long way to go.
Most of us think of TOPS as a higher education phenomenon, but of course there's a lot of preparation for TOPS at other levels. And as far as the stability of education as a whole, do you think TOPS is an essential part of that?
I think TOPS is an essential part of it, but one thing, Jim, that we've really realized is that we can't just have this discussion about post-secondary education and about financial aid for students who qualify for TOPS, meaning they've got a 20 on the ACT and they've got the requisite GPA. We've got to think about the kids who haven't qualified at that level, but maybe have qualified for community college admissions. Maybe they need to get into the workforce before they can think about furthering their education again. If you don't have a plan for those young people, then you don't have a plan. And that's why revitalizing, for example, the career and technical education system through our Jumpstart initiative that partners with community colleges, with outstanding organizations like Associated Builders and Contractors here in Baton Rouge, that work is critical too. It's why also we've promoted the idea that as many students as possible need to complete their financial aid forms, because you may not qualify for TOPS, but that doesn't mean that you don't need financial aid to go take that course in carpentry. It doesn't mean to go to the community college or the coding boot camp. You don't need financial aid. We have to have our students continuing their education after high school, even if it's not going to LSU or Southern, it's going into workforce preparation.
I think it's fair to say you have clashed, as have some of your predecessors, with the teacher unions in the state, and teacher evaluations are always sensitive as far as discussion points. Do you think those are vital to the stability of education in Louisiana?
Yeah, it's important. And accountability at every level is important. It's important at my level. It's important at Bessie's level when they face re-election. It's important at the teacher and the principal level. But what we oftentimes don't talk enough about is the support side of that. Accountability without support is not a winning formula. And teachers are not isolated entities. They need to have a strong curriculum to make them effective. They need to be prepared to make them effective. They need to be trained and ongoing support to make them effective. And I think too often we think about them as if, well, they're either effective or they're not. Well, look, here's the way I think about it. We train them in our universities to be teachers, funded by TOPS, funded through our state budget, funded through taxpayer dollars for 4 years to be a teacher in our institutions. If they're ineffective, it's not shame on them, it's shame on us. And that's why I've pushed so hard for a system where teachers have a full year when they're seniors in college. Aspiring teachers have a full year as residents in the classroom, just like doctors, just like architects, just like nurses, training under the mentorship of a veteran educator. So the way when they come out of that residency year, that apprenticeship year, we can validate that they are effective. And there's no more putting people in the classroom and wondering whether they're effective. We have validated it before they ever become full-time educators.
877-217-5757 for Superintendent John White, the man who leads the education policies for 700,000 public school students in our state. Gustavo in Goodwood, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana, Gustavo.
Good morning. I'm glad to see that Mr. White is not lacking in self-adulation and self-esteem. Congratulations. I have 2 points. Hopefully, I'll be able to ask both questions. One is, when is teacher pay going to be addressed to a level that they can make a living without struggling paycheck to paycheck? And secondly, my daughter is a teacher, and her school is full of asbestos and all kinds of physical plants that will never be addressed, apparently. I would like to know what Mr. White has to say in that aspect.
All right.
Well, first, if any child in this state is being exposed to asbestos, it's in violation of the law and needs to be addressed immediately. And I would welcome the chance to communicate by email about that particular issue, because it needs to be addressed. It should not be happening if that is in fact happening. With respect to teacher pay, it needs to be addressed. Louisiana was at the statewide, at the southern regional average in terms of teacher pay, and as recently as several years ago. The funding formula for K-12 education has increased, but it hasn't increased at a rate necessary to keep up with our competitors. And we are in a serious state of risking losing the competition for talent, for teaching talent, and sustaining it, because the lifestyle is sustainable as a teacher, with other states. But, Jim, there's an added problem to Gustavo's question, and that is that we have to start facing the reality that where we are being outcompeted for sustainable talent with a living wage, as Gustavo says, is really not just in all teachers, but it's in particular with teachers who teach math and science. And we have to address this fact. I say this as an English teacher. We are not short on English teachers, and I have great respect for English teachers. I'm one of them, but we're not short on them. Where we're short is not just competing with Mississippi and Texas for teachers. It's competing with Exxon and Chevron and all of these extraordinary organizations that recruit math and science majors into their organizations and pay them lucrative salaries. We are not keeping up with the demand of other industries. And as a result, we're not just falling behind other states, we're falling behind other industries. We have to increase teacher pay. It has to happen now. But it also, we should consider as we do that, how we're being sensitive to teachers who are most in demand.
877-217-5757 is your number. There is still time to talk with Superintendent John White on Talk Louisiana. We're back after this brief timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Becca Dill is producing. The show is Talk Louisiana. We're glad you're listening to WRKF. We're spending a bit more time with Superintendent of Education John White, native of Washington, D.C., degrees from the University of Virginia and NYU, and he's been in Louisiana now for close to a decade, and almost seven of those years as the Superintendent of Education. 877-217-5757 for Superintendent White. Jim in Denham Springs. Hi, Jim. You're on with John White.
Hi, Superintendent White. A couple things to address. The first is that at what point can we stop trying to say that we're in with the Southern average? Because the Southern average is terrible for teacher pay. I mean, can we at least strive to something a little better to actually keep our good teachers in the state rather than sending them off to other states where they actually can, you know, get paid a living wage?
John White, is that a valid assessment, or is it impossible to, when you factor in cost of living, for example, home costs in California about 10 times if you're going to buy a home what they would be in Baton Rouge in some places. So how do you compare these states when you're assessing teacher pay?
Well, look, no question. And I gave two frames of reference before. The first frame is, are you competitive with other states? The second question is, are you competitive with other industries? And I'm more concerned about the second one than the first one. We do need to be practical about some of the financial realities. It's not just teachers who are suffering in our state. It's families. It's children. And part of that is about our economy, and some of it is about our state budget. And we're building back to a stage of economic prosperity. We're building back to a state where our budget is healthy. And in all of those realms, teacher income, the way that we support our students, the way that we support our families across our budget, education, health, and otherwise, is all going to be in a building back phase. So we're not going to get it all accomplished immediately. We should, but we need to start now. I completely agree that just looking at our comparison with other states is not the way to look at it. We've got to look at it compared with other industries and how teachers can have a sustainable and competitive wage so we can get and keep the best and brightest in our profession. It's not happening. It needs to change.
What about charter schools? Do you like them?
I like the good ones. I like effective traditional public schools. I like effective charter public schools, and I like effective non-public schools. I believe families should have a choice. But I also believe that there should be a common minimum standard of excellence. And that's why for the schools, Jim, in Baton Rouge and Shreveport and New Orleans and everywhere in between that are funded on the public dollar, be they parochial schools and other non-public schools, again, charter, traditional, magnet, whatever, I believe families should have a choice. But I believe there should be accountability for results if you're going to take from the taxpayer dollar. And we're really the only state in the country that has that. We use the same system of assessment, the same system of accountability for our publicly funded non-public schools, for our charter public schools, for our traditional public schools. And when you do that, what you realize is traditional public, charter public, non-public, the debate amongst those things, that's a debate based on false dichotomies. Charter schools are not writ large better than traditional public, which isn't, you know, better than private. Private isn't better than charter. Private isn't better than traditional public. Mm-hmm. There are good schools within each of those groups. There are struggling schools within each of those groups. And it's time we get past these adult-focused debates and focus on getting a good school for every child, no matter what the label on it is.
A listener asks about teachers and guns. There are those who believe this would be a way to address the violence that we've seen in our country at some schools. Is that the way to do it?
I don't believe so. I remember when I was in the classroom when Columbine happened, we would do these drills, and schools across our state today still do that. But I remember feeling in those moments when the loudspeaker would happen, it would come over and there'd be a certain word indicated that we were to huddle behind a desk, and I had 30, 35 kids in those classes. And when I think about at that moment, me as a teacher and the 50,000 teachers in our state, having then to have responsibility for becoming law enforcement effectively, I don't believe that's a recipe for success. I do believe there are things that we in our state and across the country must do to secure our facilities and provide our students safety. As I was proud to stand with the governor last week and Colonel Reeves at State Police to announce our progress on some of those initiatives, but I do not believe that arming teachers, and certainly not forcing teachers to be armed or making them an agent of law enforcement, is the appropriate way to do it.
Dan downtown. Hi, Dan. You're on Talk Louisiana with Superintendent John White.
Yes, Superintendent. Have you lobbied Exxon and the rest of Big Oil, along with the legislators who pander for their campaign contributions, to forego some of their profits, pay their fair share in taxes, so we can hire the teachers we need?
Funding is always an issue, and you have been superintendent through some austere times. Do you get down in the weeds as far as how to perhaps change the funding mechanism, as Dan wants you to do?
Well, I'm an advocate for more money for public schools. Our state has been through a very robust debate, Jim, and certainly not lost on anyone who follows the news, about the appropriate level of taxation. And I'm pleased that the legislature was willing to work with the governor and come to a conclusion so we can all move forward. I think now we're going to be in a budget rebuilding phase. Our economy is coming back. Certainly our pending revenue projections look more positive than ones we've sadly become accustomed to in the past. And what I will be advocating for is that within that whole picture, we do everything we can to make education and salaries competitive, not just with other states, but with other industries. And now, at the same time, we need to address fiscal realities. It is true that Louisiana is one of the per capita poorest states in the country, but in terms of how much we spend on a per capita basis, local, state, and federal, we place right in the middle of the pack in education. It is true that that amount per capita has not gone up dramatically in the last 10 years, and we are lagging, and we need to rebuild. But at the same time, the overall amount that the state has contributed has increased significantly, and to the tunes of hundreds of millions of dollars over the last 5 to 10 years. And so these are realities we need to address. I'm happy that the budget, the taxation situation seems to be reconciled for now. We need to make the most of what we have.
Do you recall when you first arrived in Louisiana?
Very much, very well. Yes, I do.
How was that experience? You, of course, are As I stated, a native of the nation's capital and educated on the East Coast and taught in New Jersey, and you come to Louisiana, you're in a different part of the world with a different culture. How was it?
Yeah. You know, Jim, two things strike me as different in a good way. First is that where I was born and raised, you are educated and then you go off somewhere else and likely don't spend your life near where you grew up. One thing I love about our state is that it's actually quite the opposite, that we educate our kids and they're very likely to be Louisianans as adults. And that means the education system has a different level of responsibility. 82% of Louisianans were born in Louisiana. You compare that to Florida, where it's only 37% of Floridians were born in Florida. I mean, that means literally our responsibility is twofold for educating our kids well with respect to the future prosperity and health of our state. But the other thing is there's a love of children, a love of family, and a love of place that is palpable in Louisiana. You know, it's true every day in our communities. It's true Saturday night in Death Valley. It's true in our schools. You just feel it. You feel the love of family, of tradition, of people. And, you know, people talk a lot about the deficits we have educationally and income-wise and such, but that is an incredible asset. And if you can harness the power of the love that families have for their kids and our schools, we're going to move things in the right direction.
Well, John White, it is always good to talk with you, and I hope we do this sometime in the next few months again. Thank you for joining
Likewise,
us today.
Again.
Take care. See you soon. And we'll be back after this brief time out on Talk Louisiana and hear from Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief from The Advocate. Now the news with Karen Henderson on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Becca Dill is producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. We're joined now by Capital Bureau Chief Mark Ballard of The Advocate. We'll cover some ground with him. And as noted at the start of today's program, the governor's election is inside 14 months. October 12th of next year is the primary. The Republicans are still waiting to see what John Neely Kennedy will do, the junior U.S. senator who has run frequently for office and once even gotten a governor's election and pulled out in 2003 when Bobby Jindal got the endorsement of Mike Foster. John Kennedy decided to run for re-election for treasurer, and that was a smart political move for him. Next year, he ran for the United States Senate as a Democrat and lost resoundingly to David Vitter and then became a Republican. And Mark Ballard, it appears Senator Kennedy is he's the elephant in the room for any Republican and perhaps for Governor Edwards. He is, as we noted, playing Hamlet on the Bayou. How do you see this evolving if it goes on for another month or two?
Well, my gut feel is that he's going to let it go on for a month or two until it's up to the last minute. And I'm kind of thinking he may not run, though he is making an awful lot, and based on the fact that he's done this a lot before. And but he is making an awful lot of noise, criticizing Governor Edwards and trying to call into question. I mean, you look at the criminal justice bit and the letter to President Trump last week, and he seems to be trying to call into question a lot of those issues that look good for the governor.
Yeah, he and the Attorney General, Jeff Landry, are often at odds with the governor, and they're kind of like a tag team. They rarely disagree with one another, and you'll hear the senator one day slam the governor, and then boom, right after that on the heels is the Attorney General.
Right, and I think they're actually competing with each other over this, but they're trying to draw sharp lines in the sand as to what is, for a Democrat, a fairly popular governor in a red state, and so they need to kind of focus on red meat issues that will engage their base, which is a conservative base, and that's what they're doing.
Now, there's a story in today's Advocate from Melinda DeLotte from the Associated Press about candidates vying to be Secretary of State. They want to pause the work being done to replace the state's 10,000 voting machines. What's going on here?
Well, this is a contract bid in which you have, I think, the three main bidders on the the contract, which is, you know, close to $100 million to replace the voting machines in the state, which, you know, those big gray mamas have been here for 20 or 30 years now. And it's a lucrative contract. And as we often see with contracts that are this lucrative, there's fighting amongst the bidders and saying with the one side or the other has not been fair. And so, I mean, this has happened before. I guess the impact, though, is what's it going to mean for the election for Secretary of State, which is coming up in just a few weeks. And Kyle Ardoin had been one of the main people at the Secretary of State's office when he was Tom Shedler's chief deputy, kind of organizing these bids and trying to write out what it is that they wanted to have in this. And now you have the a number of the of his opponents in the election saying, well, we need to, since this has become a problem, we need to just stop this, the entire thing, and just wait until who's the next Secretary of State to make that decision.
Well, the stories in Baton Rouge and beyond change when the legislature goes home, but Mark Ballard doesn't go home. He just moves to different places. And one of the stories this week that's kind of taken a life of its own is this video of a school board member, Connie Bernard, entering a home without permission during a party. I'm sure Connie Bernard, when she did this, never thought she'd end up on the front page of the local newspaper a few times.
Well, yeah, I guess that would be true. I mean, but I guess what we're seeing these days, I think, is that everybody now has has a camera, and you know, with their phones, and I believe that that the school board member's real problem was that she went into this and had an altercation inside the home, and it was recorded on the phone, and it's something that seems to have been dogging her and will continue to dog her for probably a few more weeks.
And she has the benefit of being elected without an opponent. Nobody signed up to run against her, so she has another 4 years. And I would think that this is not the kind of thing that would result in an all-out effort to get rid of her.
Well, and that becomes a – how are they going to go about getting rid of her on that? Because there is no one running against her. She would have to be, you know, pushed out. I don't know the –
All right. I think we still have Mark. There we go.
Petition and that sort of thing. She did apologize to it somewhat.
So. Yeah. She apologized for her language. As your colleague Charles Lucier reported, she dropped the F-bomb 8 times in 22 seconds. That's pretty pretty strong. I didn't know. You can't be using many other words to do it in 22 seconds.
That's right. Well, I think it had more to do with the aggressiveness and the way that she's doing it. You've worked in newsrooms before, and I imagine you've heard that same sort of language. But it was the aggressiveness of the language and the fact that she was not had not been invited into that home.
Okay. Well, Mark Ballard yesterday was covering Entergy and the big company, the utility. A giant is asking to recoup losses from the flooding of 2 years ago. What's going on here?
Well, if you recall back in August of 2016, that there was a number of homes that had been flooded. They lost their electricity. There were people whose homes were impacted, though maybe not to the extent that others had. And you know, it was just hard to kind of keep up with paying the bills. And what happens in the real in usual times, if you miss paying your bill, I think it's like a month or two, then Entergy will enforce you paying the bill by charging you a late fee and then cutting off your electricity. And it's not just Entergy; it's all utilities do it this way. And what the Public Service Commission, the regulators, did was come in and say, "All right, you cannot add late fees, and you cannot cut off electricity during this emergency, and it's lasted for several months. And Entergy, you know, lost revenues. They lost money in doing this, and as did all of the other utilities. And in that orders that the PSC had issued said, well, we'll give you the ability to go back and collect what you've lost in revenues that you would have otherwise gotten had you been able to use these two. And that's what they're doing. It's Baton Rouge Water Company has already done it. The other utilities are lining up as well. Entergy's the largest utility. Some folks, elected officials, are saying, well, gee whiz, this was a time of emergency. You know, we should be we're out there trying to help folks. I don't know why they're all of a sudden trying to get money back. But that is part of the state law, that they get repaid for these sort of things in much the same way that we repaid them to get the lights back on after the hurricanes.
Students, as you report on the front page of today's Advocate, starting school this week in St. Joseph, must carry bottled water because the state and a university lab found extraordinarily high levels of lead and copper in water at the Tensaw Parish Elementary and High Schools. This is an ongoing issue in St. Joseph.
It is. If you'll recall that St. Joseph in March had an entirely new drinking water system. They replaced the entire thing because they found lead in the drinking water system. So they've got a new system. The problem, and they, you know, officials knew this but hadn't really kind of thought it all out, is that the water is being delivered. It's perfectly clean, but then it goes through these ancient pipes that are in the various structures. And St. Joseph is not a rich town, and that's one reason why they ended up with these problems in the first place. So a lot of their population they're still ending up with lead water, as the schools showed, mm-hmm. because they can't get, you know, once the clean water gets to their meter, it starts going through lead pipes, and that is causing the problem. One of the issues for the school was that they had been out, no one had been using that water for about 3 months over the summer, and when those collections were made, the water had been standing in the pipes, and all that lead had been leaching into it. This is, I think, you know, while it's important for St. Joseph and Tensaw Parish, because all the public school students in Tensaw Parish go to those St. Joseph schools, that what the Department of Health is really worried about is that these schools all around, there are schools all around the state of which they're going to start testing on them, and they're afraid that they have the same infrastructure problems and they could end up with more lead readings in other schools around the state.
We have about 45 seconds, but your colleague Sam Carlin reported this week that medical marijuana in Louisiana won't be available until at least November. What's happening here?
I think that's interesting, because that was predicted by some of the losers of that bid to the LSU bid, and that is that they've been unable to make enough to make their first grow enough of the marijuana to make their first their first payment, I guess.
Well, it's going to be a brave new world, but a reminder that people will not be smoking marijuana for medical purposes in Louisiana. This will still be in a pill form, but it's taking some time to get it all together. And Mark Ballard, we love following the world with you. We'll be calling again next week. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Jim.
Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for The Advocate. We'll return with more Talk Louisiana after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. In just a bit, we'll hear from Dr. Karen Danton, who's been practicing in the Baton Rouge area for more than 30 years and is an expert on stress management. It's a stressful time in our world. Don't think that's really changed from other times, but if you follow the news, there's a lot to get lathered up about. Today we lost the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, who died at the age of 76 at her home in Detroit. And it was on this date 41 years ago that Elvis Aaron Presley, the pride of Tupelo, Mississippi, died at his home in Memphis at Graceland at 42 years old. He's been dead 41 years, and He only lived 42, but what a two-decade ride he had as an entertainer. He was probably the most famous person in the world at one point, and spent a lot of time in Louisiana. One of his last concerts was at LSU. He performed frequently in the Monroe area. And in 1958, in January, he arrived in New Orleans. This was his last film before he began his military service, his fourth, and perhaps, according to critics, his best film, King Creole. The director was Michael Curtiz, who also directed Casablanca. And Elvis Presley, in 1958, 60 years ago, the film opened in theaters very quickly, July 2nd of 58. He made quite an impression on the Crescent City, as he did everywhere he went. He was only 23. He was playing a 19-year-old high school student named Danny Fisher in this film. And here's how he sounded in the great city of New Orleans at the Blue Shade Nightclub in 1958 with King Creole.
A man in New Orleans, he's a rock and roll, he's a guitar man with a great big soul. He lays down a beat like a ton of cola. He goes by the name of King Creole. You know he's gone, 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 jumping like catfish on a pole. Yeah. You know he's gone, 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 out of hip shaking King Creole. When the king starts to do it, it's as good as done. He holds his skin tall like a Tommy gun. He starts to growl without any throat. He bends a string and that sauce she wrote. You know he's gone, 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 jumping like a catfish on the pole. You know he's gone, 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 out of that cup shaking King Creole.
That is Elvis Aaron Presley when he was all of 23 years old. If he were alive, he would be 83, born 8 January 1935 in Tupelo, grew up in Memphis, of course, and he died in Memphis at Graceland on August 16, 1977, 41 years ago at the age of 42, and he had performed that summer at Louisiana State University. Some of the other stars in King Creole filmed in New Orleans: Carolyn Jones, Walter Matthau, Dolores Hart, Dean Jagger, Vic Morrow, and Raymond Bailey, who became known as Mr. Drysdale in the Beverly Hillbillies. Some of the scenes were like Pontchartrain, and it was quite a time in the Crescent City 60 years ago with Elvis and King Creole. In studio is Karen Danton, Dr. Karen Danton. She has appeared in many venues in our city talking about stress management, how to sleep better, make better nutritional decisions, and how to not go viral. You can hear my congestion, and she has ways that you can stay healthy even when everybody around you is falling apart. How do you do that, Dr. Danton?
Well, I'm in a venue with an organization called MDVIP, and it allows me more time with my patients than in a traditional family primary care practice. So we're able to work on lifestyle. We're able to get to the root of the problem. I'm actually a retired Navy captain. I've finished my service. I'm a big advocate for education because I believe if you teach people the right things to do, they can do the right things and keep themselves healthy. As you mentioned, I'm a community advocate. I like to get out, and I've talked to Lions Clubs and many service organizations, and for people that want to know more about stress, there'll be more presentations. I'll be doing this in the next 6 weeks, including one at my office. We do free meetings twice a month at the office so people can learn things. What I love about the way I practice medicine now and the stress management being part of the topic is I had a patient last year that came in that had tons of stress in his life, and you know, I supported him medically with the anti-stress medications, but because of the way I practice now, we were able to sit down and talk about what the root causes for his stress might be, and took about 45 minutes, but realized that some of the partners in his family-based business weren't working, mm-hmm. and we were able to brainstorm and help him come up with some plans to decrease the stress. Because the problem with stress is it sets forth all kinds of hormones in our system that lower our immune system and our ability to fight infection. It messes our sleep up, which makes us more susceptible to infection and other diseases.
Well, I imagine everybody has some stress. It's a matter of degree, and it's also on how we handle it. But over time, if you're not sleeping well and not eating well, and not exercising, those things add up, don't they?
They do, and it leads to things like cardiovascular disease, diabetes, hypertension, stroke, your immune system issues. We have lots of immune system issues these days. And the problem with stress, like you mentioned, is not just the stress, but how we deal with it. 10% of our issue is the stress, and 90% is how we handle it. And there's also different kinds of stresses. The stress that turns you into a diamond, your eustress, it's called. And like I had just before I walked in the door this morning. But there's a stress that when you have too much, your body can't compensate. And that leads to distress.
All right. Well, in the old days, when I was a kid, when we were much smaller people, a lot of people fought stress by smoking. And they probably stayed slim because they were under a lot of stress, and the smoking, of course, is often associated with not eating, but now not eating as much. Now people gorge and try to combat their stress with so-called comfort foods, and we see very large people. And I would think it's almost impossible not to have an enormous amount of stress if you're carrying an enormous amount of baggage that you really don't need.
Well, and some of the theories are, too, if you have extra baggage, fat is lots of times where we store our toxins in our system. So people that are overweight will tend to be more toxic, and they're going to feel worse than somebody who is a little bit trimmer.
Let's look at our two presidents most recently. We had a thin guy in President Obama, and we've got an overweight guy in President Trump, and it appears that he's under a lot more stress than his predecessor.
Yeah, I don't know, since I'm not his physician, but
you don't follow the news?
I try not to listen to too many politics. I really try to focus my attention on my corner of the universe that I can make a difference in.
But you look at the news, and it's impossible not to be affected one way or the other.
Absolutely.
I don't care what channel you're watching or what your political persuasion is. You're probably going to end up getting ticked off if you watch the news or listen to it, as I hope you do every day right here on WRKF. So how do you combat that? I don't like the idea of just running away and pretending
right.
Things aren't happening. How do you absorb what's going on in the world and yet not get carried away about it?
Well, I talk to my patients a lot about stress reduction. And as I mentioned, there will be opportunities at a couple of local libraries in the office if people want a very comprehensive presentation about stress management. And checking my Facebook page will have some of that on it. But there's a lot of things people can do to deal with stress. You know, if it's something you can't control, you can be like Elsa in Frozen and let it go. Realize you have no control over it, and thereby having less stress. Family support, social support, very critical, depending on what kind of stresses you have. Exercise is huge because it raises our feel-good hormones in our body, and it helps relieve stress. And that can encompass all kinds of exercise, from stretching and to cardiovascular.
Well, Dr. Karen Danton is our guest, and it's about time to part company. But I do have a way to reach her, Danton Medical Clinic at ourplace.com. And I also have a phone number, 225-218-0159. So thank you, Dr. Danton. It's been a pleasure.
And, thank you.
Congratulations on your work and for being active in our community. And as we part company, let's note that we lost the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin. In 1973, she released this song that Becca Dill has produced, and with its peak at number 3, she became the first artist in the history of the Hot 100 to have a hit song peak at each position from 1 to 10 on the chart. Here she is with a song written by none other than Stevie Wonder.